connecting to anyone. My name is Rachel Erkinich, and I'm a professor at York University. I have a PhD in Talmud and Midrash from Brandeis University. And what we're going to look at this morning, and I have some materials here, source materials, if anyone would like to sort of follow along. There's two sheets.
May I?
They just took them there, yes.
I have a problem.
Yes.
An infected ear. Could you raise your...
Speak louder?
Please?
Okay, sure.
I'm following you.
Just while that is going around, to sort of set our context of what we're going to be looking at. In Bereshit, in Genesis, when we have Yaakov and his family, his wives and his children are traveling, and they're heading back into Israel. And on the way, we're told, Rachel, whom we didn't know was expecting, we suddenly find out that during the journey, before they get where they're going, she goes into labor. And it's the last moments that we're going to be hearing, Rachel. She'll die in childbirth. And the baby is born, the baby is fine, the baby is named. It's just a handful of verses that traditionally have been looked at one way. And that's what we're going to do, is look at those, that text, look at the traditional commentaries and translations to see how tradition has looked at her last moments. And what we're going to notice in the course of that is that everyone's view is almost unanimous about how to read her last moments. But there's a little midrash that Ramban quotes and ends up saying he doesn't know what it talks about. He doesn't understand what it's referring to. And so he tries to understand it and struggles with it a bit and then basically leaves it alone. It's that little midrash fragment that I want to really focus on, because I think that it entirely changes the way that we understand her last few moments. I think it portrays the entire incident in a completely different light. And again, because it's only a small midrashic fragment, we almost didn't pay any attention to it at all, except for Ramban telling us, I don't know what this means. So those are the points I want to key into and I want to look at very closely. I didn't bring primary text. I didn't know if we would have Torah or Tanakh available, so I apologize for that. My source materials have the secondary literature there for you. What I will do is read you the primary text in Hebrew and in English so that you hear, it's not very long, it's only a handful of verses, but that you hear what our focus is from within Torah. So we're in Bereshit, and it's Lamed He, starting at Tet Zayin. I'll read it first in Hebrew. Vayis'u mi beit el, vayihi od kivrat ha'aretz lavo efrata, vateled Rachel, vatekash belidata. Vayihi behakshota belidata, vatomer lahamialedet, al tir'i, ki gam ze lach ben. Vayihi b'tzev nafsha ki meta, vatikra shmo ben oni, va'aviv kara lo binyamin. Vatamot Rachel vatikaver b'derech Efrata hi beit lechem. So it starts off by telling us that the family is traveling from Beit El, and it was as they are approaching the land to come to Efrat, Rachel goes into labor, and the birth is very difficult. And it was in the difficulty of the birth that the midwife said to her, do not fear, for this one is also to you, and I'll go with the traditional translation, this one is also to you a son. And it was with the departure of her soul, for she was dying, that she called his name Ben-Oni, and his father called him Binyamin. And Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrat, which is Beit Lechem. What I've done there is translated pretty much the way tradition and commentary has told us to translate. The difference will not be major. It will be minor. It will be in the details. But the difference in the details will be enormous. For instance, in the part where she's naming the child, it makes a big difference if you say she called his name Ben-Oni and his father called him Binyamin, or if you say she called his name Ben-Oni but his father called him Binyamin. It really colors the whole picture very differently, and the whole thing revolves on a vav, ve'aviv, which could be translated as and his father, but could equally be translated as but his father. So we really need to get as many hints as we can about how to understand that vav in order to understand the total picture. All right, well, one of the first things I want to do is, and of course the focus will be the naming, because this is her last word. In the entire incident, she only says one thing, and that's a name. She names her child Ben-Oni, and that's where the focus is going to be, is knowing she's dying, how does she spend her last breath? If you look on the sheets I've given you, and for a moment, don't look at the first one, the Bereishit Rabbah, Genesis Rabbah. Let's go to the second one, to Onklos. Onklos is an Aramaic translation of the Torah. And Onklos is known for being an incredible literalist. Translations are very, very difficult. We know that. Anyone who has to translate anything will run into problems, as I just ran into problems. When I looked at the Torah and I translated it, and twice I had to say, I'm going to go with the traditional translation, because twice I had a judgment call to make. It could have gone in a couple of different ways. When you translate from one language to another, you always make judgment calls. Is the vav an and? Is the vav a but? You know, there's always going to be those calls to make. Onklos is known for being incredibly literal. He does not deviate. He tries not to make these judgment calls. If we look at what he said and how he has translated this verse, it says, you have the Aramaic there, we'll just move to the English underneath, Onklos, and it was with the departing of her soul for, that should be she, I'm sorry, she was dying, and she called his name Son of My Pain, and his father called him Binyamin. Okay. That is my translation of Onklos. What I find very interesting, and the reason I've brought you this, is because Onklos broke his pattern. This is not the first naming in this family. We know that. They have many children, Kneinor, and they all become tribes, and we know this is a very large family. Each time we got names, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, any of the names that we got, if you look at Onklos, Onklos transliterates those names into Aramaic. So if you were to read Onklos in Aramaic, you would still read the Hebrew name. You would still read Reuven. You would still read Shimon. Transliterating as opposed to translating means that you are maintaining the sound. So that if I transliterate from one language to the other, I maintain the sound of the word, not the meaning of the word, not the translation, just the sound. Because Onklos is a literalist, he recognizes this is a name and therefore only consistently transliterates. In this instance, he broke his pattern. And if he broke his pattern, it's worth noting. When he said what she called him, he said, Son of My Pain. He translated it. He did not transliterate it. If he'd have kept to his pattern, we would have seen the word Ben-Oni there. But we don't. He translated it, thereby giving it meaning. When it comes to what Jacob did, and his father called him Binyamin, he's back to transliterating again. He didn't translate that name. So he is treating Rachel's name uniquely, differently than he treated any other name in the family, and differently than he's treating what Yaakov does. By giving meaning to that name, and because Onklos is a literalist, we have to assume that he inherited that understanding of the name. That by the time of Onklos, the name already has a meaning, and the meaning is Son of My Pain. If we look at Rashi, and Rashi's comment on Ben-Oni, we likewise see Ben-Oni, Son of My Pain, or sorrow. Binyamin, it appears in my eyes that since he alone was born in the land of Canaan, which is in the Negev, when a person is coming from Aram Naharaim, as it says in the Negev, in the land of Canaan, go and travel to the Negev. So Rashi has two comments. The first comment is, her name, what did she name the baby? She named the baby Ben-Oni. Very straightforward, Rashi says, son of my pain. Sorrow, end, nothing more to talk about. No more commentary necessary. But now when you look at Binyamin, which literally means son of my right.
Pardon?
Son of my right, right. Yamin, right. Rashi now makes a comment, and it's a geographical comment, because Rashi is now asking, what is Yaakov doing? The child has a name. Why is Yaakov giving the child another name, and why would it be this name? And so Rashi says, well, it's clear. It appears in my eyes that since he alone was born in the land of Canaan, which is in the Negev, when a person is coming from Aram Naharaim, in other words, he's saying you have to turn right. He's giving a geographic location. The reason he's called Binyamin is because they got to a juncture in the land where coming from Aram Naharaim, they have to go right. So Rashi is saying it's a geographic name. That's why Yaakov gave him this name. That's the meaning of the name. So according to Rashi, she names him, Rachel names him, with her dying breath. So far we've seen both Unklus and Rashi say with her dying breath, she calls him son of my pain. However, according to Rashi, the name is now changed by the father to mean, I'm going to turn right. And then we get to Ramban. And Ramban has, as well as Rashi, several comments. The first one is Ben-Oni, son of my pain, sorrow. Very much a quote of Rashi. Binyamin, and now he is quoting Rashi, Binyamin, it appears in my eyes that since he alone was born in the land of Canaan, which is in the Negev when a person is coming from Aram Naharaim, as it says, in the Negev, in the land of Canaan, go and travel to the Negev. And he continues to quote. Then he says the words of Rashi, and I did not understand that the land of Israel would be north of Aram Naharaim. And then he goes on at length, and I didn't bring all of it. Essentially what he's saying is he's critiquing Rashi. He's saying, as far as I remember the geography, you don't turn right. That wouldn't make any sense. If he turned right, he'd end up going in the wrong direction. So it can't be a geographic term. It can't be a geographic cue because the geography doesn't match. Now what I find interesting is no one is addressing the emotions of the moment. The woman is dying. She's giving birth. This was a woman who said, give me children or I will die. The irony, of course, being that she is dying, giving birth to children. No one is commenting on that. So far we've seen that what she named the child was son of my pain, and now we get a whole debate about the geography of whether you turn right. A matriarch just died. Then Ramban goes on. And the correct understanding in my eyes is that his mother called him Ben-Oni, and she meant to say, son of my sorrow, from the bread of sorrow I did not eat in sorrow. And his father made from sorrow, Oni, strength, from the words, the first of my strength, Oni. And therefore he called him Binyamin, the son of strength or power, for the right hand has the power and success in it. As it says, and he brought up proof text. And now we come to the Midrash. And I saw in Genesis Rabbah, he says, Ben-Oni, the son of my sorrow, and his father called him Binyamin in the holy language. And I did not know what this was, since it is all in the holy language, and so are all the sons' names in the holy language. But they hinted at what I said, that he translated into positive language. Okay. That's a very loaded Ramban. And essentially Ramban is saying a couple of different things. He's saying, first of all, when Rachel uses the word oni, it means pain. When Jacob uses the word oni, it means strength. And then he just translated it to a symbolic strength, my right hand is my strong hand. A symbolic strength, therefore Binyamin. So where Rachel named negatively, Yaakov named positively. And then he comments on the Midrash saying, I found this Midrash and I don't know what it means. I don't know what to make of it. It doesn't make any sense to me. And he explains it by saying, it's when the Midrash says Yaakov translated the name, they don't really mean translated. They mean translated from negative to positive. But that's not translated. That's actually changing. If you move something from negative to positive, that's a huge diametric change, not a translation. So Ramban ends up still unclear about what the Midrash meant to say when it made that comment. What we need to do is unpack all of this, try to get a handle on what they're saying with this controversy, and in the end, how do we view her last moments? All of it hinges on that word Oni. She is naming her child Ben Oni. And we have to remember again, and that Rachel is the one of earth, give me children or I will die. She is the one who has craved for children and had to watch her sister and the other handmaids bear child after child after child after child. I don't think we can even begin to imagine what that felt like. We know that with Sarah, our first matriarch, she had to watch Hagar, one woman, give birth to one child, and it caused problems. And here we are two generations later with a matriarch having to watch three other women give birth as she can't, and finds it difficult, and has given birth to one, and now will die giving birth to the second. These are her last moments, and we can't forget that about her. That's what the text chose to tell us about her. If we, in fact, divorce her from all of that, and we were to simply say, a woman in childbirth, dying in childbirth, painful. It's interesting that one of the comments of the meaning of the name Ben-Oni is son of my pain or sorrow. It is what we hear unanimously coming through in each one of them, even in Unklus, who broke his pattern in order to tell us son of my sorrow. Why would a woman name a child son of my sorrow? It would seem fairly straightforward, because she's dying and it's painful. This is the birth that is causing her death, therefore this is child of my pain. In my opinion, it's unfortunate that that is how most of the commentaries tell us to remember Rachel's last moments, is to essentially brand this baby as the cause of her pain and the cause of her suffering, when we know the Torah told us that she would give up her life to have a baby. This is Rachel. And yet consistently we're hearing Ben-Oni means pain. If we look at the text, how are we supposed to read the word Oni? The word Oni is a loaded word. In Bamidbar, we hear Bilam use it. He says, Lo habit aven b'Yaakov v'lo ra'ah amal b'Yisrael. It's used negatively. It talks about hardship. Oni would parallel with the word amal, which means hardship. So maybe there is no other way to look at this other than to say Ben-Oni means child of my hardship, child of my pain. But when we look at Isaiah, the word is used quite positively. It talks about Merov Onim v'amitz koach. It's in reference to God. And the word Oni parallels to the word amitz, power. It's a very positive word. So we see we have instances where it's used negatively and instances where it's used positively. Can people still hear me? I don't know what just turned on, but okay. It seems that the context will dictate how we understand the word. When we see it in Bamidbar and it's paralleled with the word amal, hardship, we know it's negative. When we see it relating to God and it's paralleled with the word amitz, we know it's positive. The context alone will tell us how to read this word. The context that the commentaries are citing, particularly Ramban, when he quoted and said that it means sorrow, from the bread of sorrow I did not eat in sorrow, is from the book Hosea. It's from a prophetic text Hosea. He has indeed found an example of reading the word negatively. And there are other examples, as we have seen, of reading the word negatively. So it is definitely a possibility to read this as son of my pain. But there is likewise a possibility to read it positively, and I would argue an even stronger case to read it positively rather than negatively. The reason I would say that is because the word appears again. It appears again when we see that Yaakov is lying on his deathbed. And it's not much later in the text. When Yaakov is lying on his deathbed, he uses the word oni. And he talks about his children as they're gathered around. And he refers to each child in their birth order. And he talks about Reuven. And he calls Reuven, his eldest son, Reshit Oni, the first of my Oni. And if you look at the translators there, and you look at the commentators there, they unanimously translate that word as child of my manhood, first fruit of my manhood, child of my sexual power. It is never translated as first of my pain. And it could be translated that way because Reuven did a horrible betrayal to his father. Immediately after Rachel dies, we are told that Reuven goes and cohabits with Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, his father's concubine, the mother of his stepbrothers. He goes and cohabits with her, terribly hurting his father. It tells us, Vayishma Yaakov, he hears it and can't respond to it. So if he were to think of what was a betrayal one of his sons did to him, it would be Reuven. We would have reason to translate oni as pain. You were the first of my pain, the greatest of my pain because of your betrayal of me. But nobody translates it that way. And not one of the commentaries nor the Midrash alludes to such a meaning. But within the same, just please jot your question down and I'll leave time. Just jot it down and I'll leave time at the end. If you just hold on to it for really, I'll get to it. I'll leave time definitely at the end. What we're watching in the text is something the text has done before. We're watching Rachel and Yaakov parallel each other. Rachel is on her deathbed. She uses the word oni. Yaakov is on his deathbed. He uses the word oni. Rachel is referring to the last of the children. Yaakov is referring to the first of the children. Rachel's final words, Yaakov's final words. They're mirroring each other. They have always mirrored each other. If we read the narratives of Jacob and Rachel throughout, these two are two sides of one coin. That's the great love story that's there. They are kindred souls. They knew it the moment they saw each other. If we look at it as mirror images and parallel situations, it would be inconsistent to say that in Rachel's case, when she used the word oni, she meant pain, and in Yaakov's case, when he used the word oni, he meant strength. It would be more consistent to read them the same way, exactly as we've read everything else. And in fact, for what the commentaries are doing, which is called a gzera shava, they are going to find the word in another part in text to get the meaning and then read the meaning back onto the place that was in doubt. It's done quite often. But usually what you try to do is find the closest meaning. They've gone all the way to Hosea when all they had to do was go a few chapters ahead and find the same word with Yaakov. So if we go for consistency, and we look at what Yaakov said when he used the name, and read that onto what Rachel is saying, we suddenly end up with a very different picture of it. Yaakov is using the word oni in the sense of power, strength, and particularly, as the English translates, manhood or sexual strength. It does have that component to it. The word oni does contain within it sexuality or fruitfulness, the product of our sexuality. Now let's for a moment remember the setting when Rachel uses the name. She's giving birth and she's dying. Jacob is not there, I can guarantee it. First of all, the text only told us of one other person there, and that's the midwife, the mielet. The men are not there during the birth. She knows she's dying, and she knows that there are two risks that are now being run. One is that the child will be blamed for her death. Two is that Jacob will blame himself for her death, because it was their union that caused her pregnancy, and it was her pregnancy that caused her death. So she understands that what now lies in jeopardy are the two people that mean more to her than anything else. The newborn baby that she's giving her life to bring into the world, and her partner that she very much sees as her kindred soul, her soulmate. Rather than, in my opinion, rather than calling the child son of my pain, which actually brings to life those fears, she does the opposite. She sends a message to her husband through the child's name. It's her last communication with Yaakov. Ben Oni, son of my strength, sexual strength. That protects Yaakov. That tells Yaakov, our union, I consider to be my greatest strength. It's not a cause of pain. It's not the cause of my death. To me, it is a shining moment, my greatest strength. Never blame yourself and never blame this child. The naming of the child protects them both. She sends a message to Yaakov. She can't do anything else. She knows she's dying and he's not there. Now, is that unusual? Not for this family, that's not unusual. They've been talking to each other through their children's names right from the very beginning. Every one of those children's names has been a message to one of the parents. Reuven, right, says, look, a son, Reuven, that's lovely. But when you look at why Leah says she named him Reuven, she says, because God saw my pain. She's clearly aiming that one at Yaakov, to let Yaakov know that she's in pain, and that while he may be blind to it, Hashem isn't blind to it. God saw it. Shimon, God heard my affliction. They're talking to each other. The parents are talking to each other through the names of the children. And we know from the text that names are essence. So look what's being implanted into the essence of these children. And it is to no one's great surprise that they will grow up and sell off one of their brothers. Because all of the issues of the parents have been planted into the arena of the children through their names. The parents were not talking to each other. They were conveying messages through the names. That's what Rachel has done. But she did it positively, as she did with the name Yosef. It's a positive name. This is a positive name. She is sending a positive